How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The federal public health emergency may have ended a little over a year ago, but COVID remains a threat. It's still transmissible and is circulating across the country and the world. And right now, several U.S. cities are experiencing a summer surge of infections. But even in the midst of the grief, fear, and confusion that came with the pandemic, there's still work to be done to make sense of that time and consider the kind of world that we want moving forward. That's the premise of former Northwestern professor and author Michelle Weldon's new book, called The Time We Have, Essays on Pandemic Living. She divides the book into three parts, persons, places, and things, and closes the first part with a chapter called Liars. Now, in it, Michelle dives into the rampant mis- and disinformation that we saw during the pandemic and beyond. Much of that looks familiar to what's happening now in the lead-up to the presidential election. Most recently, there's been that outburst of conspiracy theories about the attempted assassination of Donald Trump last weekend. So I asked her what ties she sees between all of these issues. Here's Michelle.
Well, I think the rush to fill in the gaps with just random information, there is no longer a wait and see. There is a wait and attack. And what we saw in COVID was a pandemic of this disinformation, this intentional leading people astray from what is truth about vaccine and protection and masking and all of that, that really can end up being a matter of life and death. If you tell people what is not true and that it's a hoax, it can end up killing them. Mm-hmm. And we learned from that a little bit, I thought, but it has reemerged as this new onslaught, you know, with theories that are completely unsubstantiated and do not have any basis in fact. And it spreads like a pandemic, and people seem to aspire to spread those lies and also to believe in them, which is kind of awful.
Well, to that end, you discuss in the book how, you know, COVID happened at a time in history when more people were online than ever before. They were gathering their news there. They were gathering their information from social media, digital sites. So how then do you see us, like traditional media, how are we responsible for sifting through and correcting what's false?
Well, you know, fact-checking is not new, and that's not just about social media platforms, but industry and the media has had fact-checking since centuries ago.
Since the beginning of time.
Right, yeah. Right. And I think it's more important now. And, you know, PolitiFact is doing that. And PolitiFact looked into 2,300 claims about COVID vaccines, including a very recent Instagram post that 17 million people died from vaccines. And that went viral. And that is just not true. So I think as storytellers and members of the media, that it's really our responsibility to correct what is wrong and what is dangerous. And when you were talking about the assassination attempt theories and conspiracy theories, you know, the politicizing of that is not just like unusual. It is literally dangerous, yeah, and life-threatening.
And when we say theories, just to be specific, we're talking about theories that were going around that, you know, Donald Trump himself was behind this, right, attack, or Biden
Secret Service. And that's, yeah, why they were smiling in the photos. I'm like, I don't think they were smiling in the photos. It's just, it's bizarre, but it also can lead to violence. And this new form, it can also be life and death, just as it was, yeah, with COVID.
Now, in the introduction of your book, The Time We Have, you write about your overwhelming fear of various things, right, since childhood, and how COVID just exacerbated some of that feeling. I think a lot of people listening can relate, Michelle. So just talk to us about how that pandemic era forced you to navigate fear.
Well, I think, the daily mortality rates of how many cases in your city, in your suburb, in your county, in this country, in the world, always available for you to find out, like, who's dead since noon. It just had this cloud over me and over most of the people that I know, really thinking and worrying about it and not really knowing in the very beginning how it was spread and how you got contaminated. You know, like you're going to touch a counter and you'll get COVID. Mm-hmm. And I remember people saying, you know, they let their lettuce sit on the counter for 6 days and they don't touch the mail for a week. And there were
those
so
were
many
the days we were washing our groceries right. like crazy, right?
Right, right. And then, you know, of course, not going anywhere and staying home. I mean, it changed how we live and it changed how we thought about death and how we thought death could reach us. It felt random and it felt we had no control. And not only like if we could control what we were doing responsibly, you couldn't control the people around you. And also the anger that generated a lot of people about masks and don't you make me wear a mask. And people were killed over that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why'd you write this book? Who's it for?
It's for people like me and like you, hopefully, and anyone who really wants to take a look at a time frame that the world spent that is unprecedented, and to think about who we are in this particular time and what has changed us and what has changed about our communities and our country and the world and what we can do to change ourselves to make any of that better and where we can find hope in some of this devastation that we saw and we felt and the grief that we felt and went through and what we were not allowed to do. So really be mindful about how we live and move through the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you talk about this current time, we're in the middle of what looks like another summer COVID surge, Michelle. Right. Cases are rising across the country. So aside from keeping up to date with our vaccines and being mindful of others and distancing ourselves, how specifically do you suggest that we approach this time period individually and societally?
Well, I think we have to not only think about ourselves and what we're doing for ourselves, but be empathic and think about what we can do for other people. You know, we talk about stay at home. Well, there are people who don't have homes. Like, what can we do to reach out and to help other people who are battling this very real surge that I think in June, the World Health Organization said there were 1,000 deaths last month, which is a lot less than the 17 million
right.
that were announced in 2023 that had been globally. But one death is too many.
Absolutely. So in the book, you touch on themes throughout. One is privilege. That sort of comes up throughout the book. You bring into light some of your own personal experiences growing up, which you later recognize as privilege in some instances. Why was it important to share some of those stories?
Because in the work that I do and the person that I am, I recognize where I come from and that I'm a white middle-class woman who has great privilege and I have access to health care and I am not deterred by social determinants of health and I can get myself to a doctor who knows me and a doctor will believe my symptoms and I can go fill a prescription and pick it up at the drive-thru in a car that I own and I have in my driveway. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's just not the case with so many people. And my own experience with COVID and also being in the ICU during that time period,
yes,
not for COVID, but for a blood clot on my lungs, another health emergency.
But you were watching people who were also in the ICU with you right. at that time dying every
That's
day.
That's right. That's right. And the announcements of cold blue and in room 2 when I'm just in room 3 and just the severity of everything. And while I was in the ICU, I was watching the burial and the funeral services of Prince Philip. And I was like, you know, halfway expecting him to rise and fly into the heavens. And then also at the same time, CNN interrupts with protests about George Floyd's death. I'm like, the concurrence of all these exact moments in history, these unforgettable moments in history, just are egregious about the value given to life and who is assigned what value from birth and who gets to benefit from what they've been given and what they've been denied.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
In a chapter called Watches, you go from talking about your early obsession with timepieces and just being on time to COVID's impact on our concept of time. You write, quote, "The pandemic threw time into the food processor and we're all still adjusting." What do you mean by that?
Well, I think, you know, working from home, a lot of people, if they're lucky enough to be employed, had remote work and it eliminated commuting time. And they might have saved 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day. It eliminated for me also business travel and saved, you know, several days a month or a week a month. And we think about, like, now what am I going to do with that time? And yet for so many people working remotely, they perhaps, you know, women especially, had to homeschool their children. And that added in a whole nother day. Mm-hmm. I tell you, I was so grateful. My three sons are all grown because I couldn't do the geography quizzes.
It was a tough time. I had middle schoolers at the time, and it was rough.
Oh,
I can only imagine the parents with the little ones.
Oh, no, I can't. Oh, that would have been, like, incredibly hard. So it's like how we thought about what is necessary to get done in one day and what is possible. And there were so many more demands. And, you know, I also write about Zooming and, you know, the exhaustion that you get from that. You know, I would have Zoom convenings that lasted 8 hours. That would be like, oh, dear Lord, here we go again, right?
Well, you said that you would be on mute most of that time, right. Unless you were presenting or had to answer a question.
Right.
I like that little insertion in the book.
And texting other people who were also on a conference call.
Saying, can you believe how long this is?
Yeah.
You're very introspective, and that comes across in the book. You pay attention to your sense of smell, the sounds around you, how all of that might have changed in pre versus post pandemic eras. Tell us more about those revelations and why you wanted to include them in the time we have.
Well, you think about that. I mean, the smells in particular, actually COVID in the very beginning, like, eradicated smell for so many people. And then people with long COVID still have that happening. And the sounds are interesting because, you know, the world grew so much more quiet. There was very little traffic and people were not commuting, and there wasn't that, you know, there weren't public events. There wasn't any real loud convenings or, you know, places where you were not ever in a crowd.
Yeah.
You were not necessarily even in an elevator having a conversation. So all those sounds were missing, just even people laughing on the street or, you know, a party. You weren't having those. So to think about how that changed and how things looked and how people really looked differently. A lot of people thought it was great to, you know, to be able to be relaxed all the time and wear yoga pants to, you know, to work.
Right.
But, you know, it's just very different. And I like to think about all those things.
Yeah.
And as a writer, I feel like exploring that is worthwhile.
Well, leave us with this. How are you finding moments of joy after all the collective grief that we've experienced over the last few years?
Well, what I have discovered, especially since the passing of my brother Paul, who was my closest friend in 2021.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you so much. This is all the time we have. It's finite, and we don't know when or where, so it's necessary for me, and I don't want to preach, it's necessary for me to be the best person I possibly can and to avoid conflict and to use the time I'm allowed and I'm given with grace and generosity and purpose and try to live that way and make some meaning in the world.
That's Michelle Weldon. Her new book, The Time We Have, Essays on Pandemic Living, is out now. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by me, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Max Lubers. Are you interested in more conversations about books? You can find our full archive of interviews at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.